And we're live, folks. Hey, thanks for tuning in to the BAMP podcast. Another spine tingling episode of Owen Explains It All, in which Owen K. Stevens, hey Owen, talks about some recent pop culture phenomenon and how to bring some of that fun to your RPG game, and specific focus on Starfinder. And here is our handcrafted artisanal opening. Well, Owen, good to see you again, sir. How are you this fine Tuesday?
I'm good. I had a slight technical issue just before I came on. The technical issue being my wife stole my webcam, which, you know, she needed it at the time Friday, and I've had plenty of time to go grab it and move it back, but just forgot.
I understand. This is the way of things. Jacob.
This is the way.
This is the way. Jacob Blackman is here, too. Jacob, how are you today, sir?
I am doing all right.
All right. Cool. So today we are talking about not really a controversial movie, but I have heard some people who were leery about it first. Ghostbusters Afterlife, which is the most recent Ghostbusters. And it's in not a reboot. It's in the same world as the first two movies. And as far as I can tell, seems to fully ignore the reboot from 2016.
So the 2016 reboot is set in an alternate reality, and there is significant evidence that Afterlife ignores Ghostbusters 2. At the very least, it never makes any reference whatsoever to anything that happens in Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
Now, you could just claim that they simply don't mention it, but that would mean not mentioning things like the Statue of Liberty going walkabout when you are trying to determine, hey, did any of this weird stuff in the 80s in New York actually happen? And I am reasonably sure that if the Statue of Liberty went walkabout, people would not, even 40 years later, be going, oh, did something weird happen? Yeah, no, that's a cityscape changing event. So I understand why they ignored everything but the first movie. It's worth noting that it is not simply ignoring the reboot, it ignores everything except the original film. So it's not tacking into the comics or the anime, or the animated series. The second movie, it just plays straight from the first movie to here. In fact, it kind of argues with the continuity of the second movie, which is fine. I think Ghostbusters 2 is a better movie than some people give it credit for, but it is not as good as the original. As far as ignoring the reboot, I liked Ghostbusters, who are you going to call? But liking that does not mean that I have to dislike anything that is not in the same continuity. So I think it and Afterlife do very different things. Afterlife is very much more trying to tap into the Stranger Things audience. Our main characters are underage. There's a great deal more Scooby-Doo group conspiracy than there is in any of the other Ghostbusters. The one thing it does hit that the original hits that I'd kind of prefer it hadn't is that content warning. And before I go any further, content warning on everything. There are spoilers about all three Ghostbusters films, other Ghostbusters franchises, even the vaguely similar movie Spectral. We will be doing spoilers. So if you don't want to be spoiled, this has been your opportunity to ditch. Both the original Ghostbusters and Afterlife have some non-consensual sexual encounters occurring, which no one cared about these things, I guess, when they made the original. And I'm getting the feeling they felt the need to stick to continuity with this one. But given all the other things they changed, even from the original movie's continuity, I would argue that it was not necessary. And it's played for yucks, and I get that, but for me, it's much more yuck than yucks, if you get my drift. All that said, there is some very cool stuff in this movie, and it is a great source for your science fantasy games, specifically Starfinder, which is what I tend to gamify things in for Owen Explains It All, about how to have science and the supernatural interact and overlap. And of course, these are mostly the same things that have been going on since the original Ghostbusters. But until Afterlife came along, I just had not thought about what this could mean from a science fantasy point of view. And it's worth noting that there have been a lot of movies, the Netflix movie Spectral comes to mind, that have had what appear to be ghosts and tried really hard to slap a scientific explanation on them. And there's nothing wrong with that. But Ghostbusters doesn't do that. This is very specifically a universe where ghosts are the spirits of the dead. You can summon them with rituals. There are ancient Sumerian gods walking around, at least sometimes. And all of those things still follow a set of rules. And if you know those rules, you can build science to counteract them. And that becomes a wonderful playground for something like Starfinder, where you specifically have things, for example, like incorporeal undead. Incorporeal creatures aren't impossible to deal with in Starfinder, but they're not easy. And I could easily see introducing equipment, in fact, I will in my blog tomorrow, that allows you to interact with incorporeal creatures as a scientific weapon designed to interfere with their planar travel and their exact frequency of dimensional reflection and whatever other buzzwords we want to throw in there. When you look at it through that vein, Afterlife becomes a movie about a science fiction movie about forgotten technology, right? It's specifically a movie where this stuff happened 40 years ago, the demand for it went down, and no one is using it or improving it or expanding on it. And so when the original threat comes back around, you have to literally blow the dust off some previous devices and go back to the old way of doing things. Jacob, thoughts?
I only recently got to see this movie, so it's pretty fresh in my mind, and I really enjoyed it for its story. It's both in the nostalgic value and for the new value that it has. I always like the concept of science and magic being able to work together, because and a lot of people say no, they can never do that because they're totally different aspects. And it's like, hold up a copy of Frankenstein, and it's like, here is a classic story where science and magic are working together.
Well, and interestingly, I mean, you can make the argument that there's no magic in Frankenstein, right? That it is presented purely as a advance in natural philosophy, which is the science of the era. But you then get the question of what is technology? If someone has no problem with a magic sword, swords do not grow on trees. Swords are a form of technology. And what you can do with the sword is very much driven by, are we capable of mining and smelting iron? Are we only capable of doing copper? Do we understand the difference in use between copper and bronze? If we can make iron, can we make steel? If we can make steel, do we do it on purpose, or are we accidentally creating a little bit of steel? Like there's the Viking question of, did their blades have an advantage because they would sometimes anoint them in blood? And I don't remember the details of the article, but basically they thought they were doing this magical process, but the exact way they did it may have given them a very slight literal edge on their blades.
Why is it that iron disrupts fey and ghosts?
Yeah.
You know, why does salt disrupt ghosts? You know, the explanation is, well, it's a pure element. And it's like, that's pseudoscience. If you think about it, they never describe why it does. And
that's the exact point where the original Ghostbusters comes in, and that in Ghostbusters, they get these readings, right? They've got scanners, they get readings of ectoplasmic energy. And Egon specifically says, if these are consistent, then there's stuff we can do. So you could easily say, okay, we are setting up a game here's the original Ghostbusters trailer. We're going to set up a game where people have come to understand why silver affects werewolves. And as a result, it is not a matter of a magical property of silver. But perhaps silver has some level of conductivity, or in the real world, silver has an antibacterial effect. So you might say, hey, we've studied the science of what silver does to these supernatural entities, and now you can set your laser to silver and it will pulse at an antibacterial frequency that will have the same effect on werewolves as silver, or iron, or salt. You can take all those things and turn them into reproducible scientific effects. Now, of course, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to, in the context of Starfinder, I keep thinking about there's a haunted space station or there's a haunted space cruiser, and your PCs have to deal with that somehow. But how are you seeing that tie into a sci-fi setting like that?
So there are a lot of interesting things you can do with it. One is certainly the haunted house, the movie Escape Horizon, though it is a horror movie. Sorry, Event Horizon. Yeah. Though it's a horror movie, it's a haunted house in space. That's all it is. It is very similar in some ways to the way that hyperspace travel is handled in Warhammer 40K, which is another famous, in this case, much older science fantasy property. So there's a haunted thing and you are equipped to go deal with it is absolutely one possibility. And that has the advantage of the GM being able to say, okay, you all are being hired basically to be exterminators, except that instead of roaches or rats, you're dealing with ghosts. And so you are given the specialized tools needed to do that. If you want to see a more serious take on the science versus incorporeal creatures, rather than Ghostbusters, which have always been this comedy, sci-fi, horror, supernatural mix, which is one of the reasons why I think the first one has always been seen by so many people as superior. And that was sort of, it was lightning striking. It was alchemy. Those elements shouldn't necessarily all work together. And it is very difficult to do something that is in the same universe and good and different, but still feels like it follows the same rules. But if you're doing this in your game, all you have to do is decide what those rules are. So I could easily say one option is to have a specific adventure. That is a great way to have this sort of stuff introduced to a game temporarily. If you want to see a way to do it that is less intentional, less someone hires you to do this, because, I mean, ultimately, most of the things that the Ghostbusters do in the original movie, they are paid workman-like jobs. I mean, they're wearing what look like exterminator outfits. They even make a joke about it in the original movie. But there is the movie Spectral, which is available on Netflix, which has no comedy in it whatsoever. And it tries to take a harder sci-fi approach to a very soft sci-fi topic. But it is another example of how you could handle this sort of issue for a role-playing game, in that the main characters show up in a situation where things are being torn apart by ghosts and nothing they do works. Now, in Starfinder, ghosts take half damage from magic and they take half damage from all energy types. And in Spectral, they are ignoring everything else around them. But you could get that effect for a specific kind of encounter by having the players show up, run into what appear to be ghosts, and have those ghosts not follow the normal rules that people expect. And luckily, we have things like the mysticism skill and the natural science and physical science skills, where people could make a check and be told, yes, that appears to be an incorporeal ghost, but it is on a different frequency for whatever reason as regular ghosts, and normal ghost options won't apply. And that gives you the possibility of having people have to survive long enough to gather the information to start building the things that will have an effect. I didn't warn Mike I was going to do this in advance, so he may not have a clip drawn up. But another movie that does a very similar thing is 13 Ghosts. I'm specifically thinking of the Tony Shalhoub remake, yeah. Where they note things like glass that has certain rituals written on it, or loudspeakers that play rituals, even if they're on a tape recorder, have an effect on ghosts. And as a result, one of the things that the people in that movie do is they pry a plate of that glass loose and carry it around as an anti-ghost shield, because the rules are consistent. So one of the great takeaways from all these movies is that if you create a set of relatively, and Mike has pulled up 13 Ghosts, great. If you have a consistent set of rules, and make them simple, then players can have them exposed to those rules and discover them as they go, and then start making decisions based on those rules. And that can be a very satisfying thing for a player, because you can, it's one way to get the kind of classic trope when we first ran into the foe kicked our butts, and then most of the story occurs, and then at the end, for whatever reason, we're doing better. And like, it happens with superheroes all the time, and frequently the superheroes just do better for no explicitly described reason. But if you have a situation where you end up saying, hey, it turns out, just as a random example, that this particular frequency of ghosts are only affected by things that are a mix of fire and electricity damage, because we've got plasma weapons all over Starfinder. And then you say, look, it's not that the fire is hurting them or the electricity is hurting them, but that they are fully immune to all attacks except attacks that do a mix of fire and electricity. And then the players have, you know, you give them the option of, hey, are you going to start putting fusions on your equipment? Are you going to try and research new spells? Are you going to go pick up new stuff? Are you going to be allowed to go tinker? Because crafting stuff isn't hard in Starfinder. If you have the necessary number of ranks, you can just do it. And it takes like 4 hours. So if you give them, if you do Mike's idea of the haunted station, and you have them discover that plasma weapons are the only weapons that have any effect, then they can go to the shop and say, hey, can we modify some stuff to make plasma weapons? And if it's, say, a third through fifth level adventure, you can end up saying, yeah, you've got enough stuff here for a bunch of first level plasma weapons. They'll do a die four. But then you as the GM know that the ghosts end up taking triple full damage from the plasma weapon, so that even though the players are facing something using equipment that is much lower level, they have at that point overcome the difficulty of the immunities and have a outer darkness. Nice call. They have the tools necessary. And especially if you end up having a level up, if they end up doing things like, hey, I can take a special ability that allows me to put a flaming fusion. I've got an electrical gun that will cause it to do half electricity, half fire. And they get to feel smart about overcoming the challenges and drawbacks because you've introduced a few simple, consistent rules that you then play with.
Yeah, you mentioned Outer Darkness, which I just brought up. A canceled comic from Image Comics by John Layman and Afu Chan. I believe it is two guys behind Chew, which was a much more popular and successful comic. The main conceit here, you're mashing up basically horror with science fiction, but the idea is that space is full of horrible things. And not necessarily Martians and Klingons, but ghosts who want to do horrible things to you. So every ship has got a squad of exorcists and sorcerers putting, you know, shields to keep them from, you know, coming in. And there's a resurrectionist on every ship. And what I always thought was the coolest part about the setting was that the spaceship that you see here in the lower part of the cover, they've got a moldy old Babylonian god slaved to their engine. They bind him there and say, yeah, you make the ship go now. Sorry, sucks to be you. And every once in a while, keep him happy. You know, if they have a fight or they repel borders, they bring a few prisoners and let the engine eat them.
And there are lots of cool stories that mix sci-fi and fantasy in interesting ways. Sometimes it's simple, right? If you look at the movie 30 Days of Night, again, spoilers, the conceit there is that a group of vampires realize, hey, if we go north into the Arctic Circle, there are periods there where the sun does not come up for weeks at a time. So the fact that we are vulnerable to sunlight is not an issue. Well, if you take that to its logical conclusion, we all know that stars are just other suns. So that means, and stars don't cause problems for vampires. So one of two things is happening. Either it is only the light from their own star, their native star, that harms vampires. And of course, that would maybe make sense. There's things about native soil and their native land. So that you could end up saying, yeah, these particular vampires have moved to the subterranean city / mall in Toronto, or they stick to the inside of a space station because direct sunlight never hits them. Or you could say any sunlight does it, but once you are a certain distance from the sun, it is no longer intense enough. Once it looks like a pinpoint of light instead of a disk, that happens to be far enough away that it's not an issue. You make your vampires immune to cold, perhaps, and you end up with vampires on Pluto or out in the Oort belt or maybe beyond the Oort Belt, the reason that we have not run into other sentient species is that most of the galaxy is overrun by vampires, and it's only our sun. Out of the entire galaxy, our sun is the one sun that has the power to make vampires go piff, and as a result, our solar system is the only vampire-free solar system in the galaxy.
That would be terrifying.
Well, yeah, and then you can do an entire plot line based simply on that, right? If you guys want to travel beyond this point, you got to find a way to bring the sun with you, because otherwise vampires rule everything. Okay. And if you're going to do sci-fi vampires, go watch the old movie Life Force, which is a terrible movie, and I do not recommend, except for the fact that it's got sci-fi space vampires, and... How do I put this?
I was very fond of it when I was 12 and 13.
Sure. Yeah, that's part of the issue. The main thing for me was that it's a very early movie to take a look at vampires as both extraterrestrial entities and actual supernatural dead people. For that matter, I mentioned Jacob Blackman and I were with a group of people that watched Plan 9 from Outer Space some months ago. And as terrible as that movie is, the plot is a viable Starfinder plot, right? Aliens want to soften up a enemy planet, so they bombard it with magic radiation so that the dead come to life. You could do an entire zombie apocalypse planet just by saying, okay, it turns out Greys or Eoxians or whatever have come and awakened all the dead spirits on this world. And now you have to deal with that so you can get to a starport so you can get off, because this is the equivalent of an atomic bombardment, right? It is their equivalent of the ultimate devastating weapon. We turn the entire planet into a giant undead graveyard zone, and that planet is now uninhabitable.
Yeah, and there are a lot of other movies that deal with something like this. I was just thinking about the Final Fantasy movie Spirits Within. Where you know it's Earth in the future, but the entire planet is populated by alien ghosts who came to the planet on a meteor, but they use science and were able to create force fields to protect cities from these ghosts, but they still send out teams to try to investigate the ghosts so that way they can try to get rid of them.
And one of the things you can do with this, again, is Starfinder conveniently has all these keywords, right? One of them is force. And force effects normally affect, for example, ethereal creatures. So you can, in your game, say, hey, a force effect prevents you from the touch of a ghost. So as long as you've got hit points in your force field, or as long as you've got
your mage armor talisman is working.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is that's giving you a force effect, you're fine and immune, and then if that gets taken down, and then you get the case of, you know, the ghosts might well know this, and you've got the day where some ghost figures out that, hey, we're telekinetic, we can pick up rocks, throw them at someone, drop their force field, then we can touch them. And that allows you to play with that whole horror aspect. You know, rocks don't do a whole lot of damage, but you can have the encounter where the players are like, okay, we got to cross this map to get to safety. That shouldn't be a big deal. And you're like, okay, well, 100 ghosts pull you all with rocks. You all take 2d4 damage. And they're like, oh, I just took 5 points of damage. I only have 20 hit points in my force field. If it goes down, we're dead. And so you've got the whole race to get into the base with its bigger force field moment. There are lots of things you can do with it. You just have to put yourself in a mindset of saying, okay, yes, it's magic, and magic does not have to make sense from a scientific point of view, right? Like, where's the energy coming from? Where's the waste energy? Is there the conservation of mass, etc.? But a lot of the most popular magic and supernatural legends and stories have rules. And those rules become things that you can manipulate with science, as long as they are consistent. You just put yourself in that mindset as a GM. You come up with a couple of exceptions to how things normally work. You call that a magic property of this creature, which scanners and science and, you know, look at the class features of whatever your players have, are able to determine. And then play proceeds from there with just this extra twist of, you guys are going to have to figure out how to deal with this new set of rules.
Cool, cool. So I'm guessing on your blog, you're going to soon have a accompanying blog post to this show that we'll talk about.
On Wednesday, the 2nd, I will have an accompanying blog post teased and a company blog post, which is going to talk about some of the things we talked about having some options for having ghosts that don't operate like normal ghosts, some rules they can work under, possibly, I haven't finished writing it yet, possibly some discussion of what kind of stories you can tell with them, and then some player options that can be used or accessed by the players once they figure out what's going on to overcome that threat. Yeah.
All right. Now, so that you said this won't be somewhere else than ownkcstevens.com? No,
it'll be ownkcstevens.com.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. All right. I thought there was something else there. All right, cool, cool. Are you looking at this as kind of just how to incorporate some ghost hunting into a Starfinder campaign, or maybe a model for a whole ghost hunting campaign?
It's just one article, right? So I'm going to be pitching it as here is a set of options you could use for an encounter or an adventure. You could take that and build an entire ghost hunting supernatural exterminator campaign off of it if you wanted to. But sort of the back end work of that is going to be beyond the scope of a single article. Although, if it is super popular, then feel free to go over to my Patreon, which will be linked from the article, become a backer, and as a backer, tell me, ooh, I want to see more of this. Because whatever the people that are paying me want to see more of, I make more of.
All right, cool, cool. Sounds good. All right, well, when we pitched this show, we promised you a fast and fun 30 minutes, and here we are at 29. So any closing thoughts, Jacob and or Owen?
Not at this time. I think we've covered it pretty well.
There are a ton of things that sort of assume that magic and science are fully integrated. 40K, Shadowrun. It is fun sometimes to look at things like Ghostbusters and Spectral and Event Horizon that are just introducing one thing that appears to be supernatural and discussing how natural forces deal with it. And you can use that rather than thinking of it as the one source of magic, of course, in Starfinder, there's lots of magic, as the one exception to the normal rules. And then the normal playstyle will proceed just with that one exception, the same way that just ghosts are the one exception in Ghostbusters, or just a interdimensional hyperspace full of demons is the one exception in Event Horizon.
All right, cool, cool. All right, thanks everybody for checking us out. And we will see you again in 2 weeks with the next Owen Explains It All. Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Jacob. And we'll catch you next time.
Bye, folks.